Welcome to Notes from the Electronic Cottage. I'm Jim Campbell. There have been some important developments and issues that we've looked at on recent programs, so let's take a look at those developments today. The first involves the first sale doctrine in copyright law. Promulgated by judges in 1906, the first sale doctrine was later added to copyright law by Congress, and it's part of that law today. We've discussed that doctrine on previous programs. As we noted then, the first sale doctrine basically says that if a person buys a lawful copy of a copyrighted work, a book or a CD or an art print, then the copyright owner has no business to tell you what you can or can't do with that particular physical copy. You can loan a book to a friend, for example, or donate it to your library, or sell your copy to someone else. This is the doctrine that makes libraries, used bookstores, and video rental outlets possible in the U.S. It doesn't apply to software or electronic books, of course, because you're not really buying a copy of an electronic book, but only purchasing a license to use it. A few years ago, a fellow named Supap Kertsang came to the U.S. from Thailand to go to college. He was astonished at the cost of textbooks here. He knew that he could buy the same textbooks back in Thailand for much, much less than the publisher charged U.S. students. So he wrote to his relatives and told them to buy a bunch of books and send them to him in the U.S. He then sold those books cheaper on eBay, making a boatload of money. The publisher, John Wiley & Sons, sued Kertsang and claimed copyright infringement. Kertsang replied that the first sale doctrine allowed him to do anything he wanted with the physical books that he legally bought. Wiley said that the first sale doctrine was only applicable to books manufactured in the U.S., not to books manufactured elsewhere. The judge, to everyone's astonishment, held that anything manufactured overseas is not subject to the first sale doctrine, and that if anyone wants to sell a copyrighted item that they bought, which was manufactured anywhere else than the U.S., they have to get the copyright owner's permission. Then, the Second Court of Appeals upheld that decision. The possible implications of this decision on our daily lives, particularly in the physical realm, is potentially huge. Want to sell some books you no longer care about? If they were printed outside the U.S., as many are these days, you'll have to get the publisher's permission first. Want to borrow a book from a library that might have been printed elsewhere? There are over 200 million of them in libraries today. The libraries would have to get permission from the publishers. Want to sell some of your CDs or some old cassettes or even vinyl at a yard sale? Make sure they weren't pressed in England or Canada or anywhere outside of the U.S. How about that fancy pocketbook you bought that has a copyrighted design and was made in France or Italy? Better call Prada or Gucci or whoever and get permission, or you could wind up in big trouble. Same for fancy watches. Do you use eBay or Craigslist? Say goodbye to those sites. If they allowed copyrighted things to be sold that were manufactured elsewhere, and the sellers don't have the copyright owner's written permission to sell the item, the sites could be liable for contributory copyright infringement. In today's world, so many of the copyrighted things that we buy and use are produced outside the U.S., including, by the way, about 40% of the parts in the cars we drive. Want to sell or trade in your car? Better know whether any of the software used in today's cars has a copyright on it. And a lot of software is used in today's cars. And you better make sure that you have the permission of the copyright owners to sell your car or even trade it in. This case eventually made its way to the U.S. Supreme Court, where the publisher called these and other examples, quote, a parade of horribles, end quote, that would never happen. But the court, in the words of Justice Breyer, is, quote, not so sanguine, end quote, about such things never happening. The Supreme Court, in a 6-3 decision, upheld the first sale doctrine, no matter where a product was lawfully acquired, as long as it was lawfully manufactured. This means that if you buy an authorized copy of something while on vacation overseas, or if you buy a copyrighted product in the U.S. that was produced in another country, you can do with that copy whatever you want. Libraries, video rental stores, and a lot of other folks are breathing a huge sigh of relief. Meanwhile, the Copyright Alert System, or CAS, is now being put into action in this country by the Center for Copyright Information. You may recall from a previous program that, quote, the Center for Copyright Information was formed as part of a collaborative effort between U.S. content creators in the movie and music industries and leading ISPs to help educate the public and deter copyright infringement and offer information about legal content options and protecting personal computers from unintentional file sharing through P2P networks. End quote. In English, if a person downloads copyrighted material using BitTorrent networks without the owner's permission, the CAS will notify the person's internet service provider, and the internet service provider will take 6 increasingly onerous stamps, known as 6 strikes, to let that person know he or she should cut it out. We've all known that this system was coming for quite a while. The big question was what those steps were going to be. Since this isn't a government system, there were no hearings or votes or any such public decision-making. It's up to each internet service provider how to handle the 6 strikes. Here in Maine, the relevant ISPs have taken different approaches. Verizon, for example, says that if a customer, after getting several notices and being forced to watch an educational video about copyright, still doesn't stop illegal downloading, Verizon will throttle the customer's high-speed connection down to dial-up speeds for a few days. That will certainly get a person's attention. Time Warner, on the other hand, after sending 5 or 6 notices, will put a browser lock on a customer's web service so they won't be able to use the web until they call Time Warner and listen to a representative instruct the customer about copyright and how to legally download music or movies. Folks, of course, shouldn't be illegally downloading copyright materials in the first place. But if they do so using BitTorrent, chances are they're going to get their ears bent by their ISPs about how they'd better clean up their downloading act. So, there are 2 updates on stories that could affect our daily lives, digital and physical. We'll try to keep up with others as they develop, right here on future editions of Notes from the Electronic Cottage.